Good evening. Welcome to the Solera Report. Today is September 12, 2019. This is Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join us this evening. I'm on my way to returning to Hickory Valley. I had an amazing time in Cape Breton, and now I've been on an uplifting drive across Nova Scotia, Quebec, Ontario. I've always wanted to really drive across Canada. It's an amazing, amazing land. And then I dropped down last night through the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It's a place I've always wanted to see, and it is truly very beautiful. And now I've stopped in Indiana to do money and markets, and then I'm going to head to Hickory Valley tomorrow. It's been quite a trip, about 80 hours of driving, but I find driving to be an enormously productive time. I get a lot done, figure a lot out, talk to a lot of people. There are several themes I saw driving up to Cape Breton and back. One is currency debasement and Agenda 21 are a financial and regulatory drain that's emptying out many rural areas and small towns. The devastation throughout North America is not over. It's going to continue, so we haven't seen the end of this. It means there are thousands and thousands of acres of beautiful land available to those who can make the economics of rural life work for themselves. The amount of empty land in Canada, as you know, is quite significant. It's not densely populated. It was interesting, both coming and going, the personnel at the border are unbelievably tense, both U.S. and the Canada side. You wonder sort of what the training and instructions coming down on them every day must be. It's very hard to have a war on terrorism when you have no terrorists, so you have to terrorize everyone. It starts with the people who are on the line, processing people back and forth through the border. It's funny, I'm reading an audiobook about CIA covert wars, and the description of the beginning of the war on terror is really stupefying. There are thousands of people sent out to hunt for terrorists and not able to find any of them. Although $7 trillion of blowing things up in the Middle East has created enough of them to keep the war going. Of course, the big push is to define Americans and American organizations as terrorists. It's easier than giving back the $21 trillion or taking back FASB 56. Remember, the people who engineered FASB 56, it's going to allow a lot of rich people to keep the real source of their fortune secret. September 28th, I'm headed to Europe for a month. Several people have expressed interest in the workshop that Ulrich's giving at Chartres that I'll be attending. Hopefully, Thomas Meyer will be joining me for at least a day in Chartres. It's called Spaces of Resonance in the 72 Names of God. You can find the link to the Academy of Future Sciences website where you can get the registration information. It's linked at our event page. Coming up, Portland, November 15th, I'll be driving out and then driving back for Thanksgiving in the Panhandle. And then Malvern, PA, outside of Philadelphia, where I'll be for Christmas. Same as we did last year, was a great group. So that'll be Friday, December 20th. We've announced our hang next year. We did Stavoren this year in March. That's Stavoren in the Netherlands. And next year is going to be Lake Constance. As you know, I go to Lake Constance every year for the Bragance Festival. And so this time we're doing the hang. It's going to be great. We're going to see Rigoletto, which I saw this year, and what an amazing production it is. The symphony will be Beethoven and Strauss. We have meetings with Jason Bodensmith, Ulrich Groniger, myself. Thomas Meyer is going to be joining us for a lunch and speak. Nina Hein is going to be there to consult on how to bring culture and connect kids and culture. So far, we've had a phenomenal group signing up. These are people I know from Uluru or Stavoren or other connections. They're coming from Australia, the UK, Switzerland, Hong Kong, Germany, Austria, and of course the US. So really an amazingly very intelligent global group and very fun people. The real game of missing money, please keep circulating this to anyone you know who's responsible for family wealth, whether they're an individual or institutional investor or they oversee their own investments or the investments of their family, CPAs, bankers, money managers. People need time to understand and figure out what this means to them. So that's why it's so important to get it into their hands and give them some time to really digested. I think it's very important that they have this under their belt before 2020. Again, you have my permission to print this out, as many copies as you want. You can file the digital copy on a stick. You can buy packages of 5 to 10 copies at the store. Let us know what we can do to make it easy for you to spread this to people, that this information can really help protect. Because as change continues to accelerate, I think having the history on this is very helpful to helping people change their paradigm about how they think about building resiliency going forward. Our theme tonight is, does it feel to you like we're watching The Twilight Zone? Feels like that to me. If you don't know The Twilight Zone, it's a TV show that started in 1959, and it's now in its third revival. The third revival, I think, started publishing in 2019. It's the one that goes, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Welcome to The Twilight Zone. What's happening? Global 3.0 is accelerating. We're going to get that high strangeness feeling more and more. We're certainly seeing headlines that are very, very strange. Part of this is technocracy, so central control through rules and AI and software. Part of this is transhumanism, integrating digital technology into humans and integrating robotics into the human labor system. You know, unfortunately, it's looking more and more like the establishment intends to use the same AI and software to run the humans as the robotics. You don't need local intelligence if you can, everybody can download their instructions from AI. If you haven't watched Elon Musk's presentation about Neuralink, it's very gruesome, but I think it'll help you understand what the vision may be. As if Mark Carney hadn't done enough crazy stuff, Macron declared the end of Western hegemony as the ECB announced a major stimulus package. And we see now California legislating a violation of the Nuremberg Code. For those of you who don't know the Nuremberg Code, it was a set of research ethics that were established for human experimentation as a result of the Nuremberg trials at the end of the Second World War. I put a list of the 10 points of the Nuremberg Code in the notes tonight, but you can just go see them in Wikipedia. Let me give you a sense of some of them. The voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. The experiment should be such as to yield fruitful results for the good of society, unprocurable by other methods or means of study, and not random and unnecessary in nature. It goes on and on to why you shouldn't be able to harm someone. If you look at what's happening with vaccines and the refusal of allowing children to get any kind of religious or medical exemption, whether it's a legal or practical matter, this is basically involuntary requirement by the state to put what I would describe as toxic elements, you know, including heavy metals, into somebody's body without their permission. Now, you know, you can certainly say, well, they don't have to go along, they can homeschool. But if you're paying the real estate taxes to pay for your kids to go to school, and then you have to homeschool in addition, there's a, you know, we're talking about serious penalties here. And remember, the vaccine companies do not have liability. They're protected from liability, so is the government. So basically, this is experimenting on people against their will. And let me just read number 4 from the Nuremberg Code. The experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. And it goes on and on. What you can see is if you read these 10 in the notes, California is clearly in violation of the Nuremberg Code. So for the United States to be legislating violations of the Nuremberg Code openly, and of course, it's really, if anything, it's the Democratic Party that has totally embraced this. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., God bless him, delivered an electrifying speech on the steps of the California legislature or governor's office, I'm not sure which it was, to advocate sort of next steps of what they're going to do to fight this, saying, quote, where are the legal and rational boundaries now that the government can force a medical procedure on children? So this is very dangerous precedent, and unfortunately it's coming our way. So we're saying the government can legislate violations of the Nuremberg Code, and that's not acceptable. As I said, technology is clearly out of control, so we have all sorts of promotion of gene editing. As I was driving across Canada, the big the big fast food restaurant that everybody stops and eat at is Tim Hortons. All of the burgers are Beyond Burgers, so they're plant meat. They're not real meat. There were no real burgers there. It was just Beyond Burgers. They also had Beyond Sausage. It appeared they still had real sausage. It wasn't quite clear to me. People stopping at KFC report Beyond Chicken. So we're seeing an explosion of plant-based meat, Beyond Burgers, Beyond Chicken, Beyond Sausage. It's moving very, very fast. We're also seeing, you know, just a plethora of crazy climate change proposals. It's so bad now, you're starting to see people come out and more scientists saying, this is really a bunch of hooey. We're also seeing wacky proposals. One is to lower the voting age to 8 was a proposal floating around Canada. If you do a sweep of the Commonwealth countries, I checked with Australia, Canada, the UK, the United States, there seems to be a push across the board to lower the voting age to 16. The clear purpose in my mind is sort of a multiple purpose. One is it's much easier using entrainment technology to sort of mind control the young people. And so there's all sorts of opportunities to get radical changes in policy if you can do that. And that includes really wacky climate change proposals that will allow Mr. Buffett to put his big cash pile to work at very cheap prices. So wacky climate change would be one. But the reality is if you can lower the voting age, then it's very easy to then lower the draft age and lower the sexual consensual age. So if you can lower the voting age to 8, then, you know, the next step is, well, 8-year-olds can have consensual sex. So just get ready for, you know, some pretty wacky stuff to follow the voting age down if that should happen. One of the things that is causing real challenges on all these different fronts is the average person really does not yet understand that surveillance capitalism and entrainment and mind control is very, very real. And it's funny, I'm watching people who, you know, they've listened to our interview with Adam Trombley on entrainment technology. They've read some of the things we've written on pornography and gambling. They understand the risks of this. They've watched The Minds of Men and listened to TrueSteam, but they don't want to be rejected by their family and friends by trying to warn this about them. It was very interesting. I was with somebody not that long ago, and I kept saying, you know, why are you, you know, leave your phone in the car. Don't bring it in. if you're going to ask me these questions, I prefer not to have a microphone stuck under my face. Anyway, it was really funny. So one morning, I was late getting up because I'd done money in markets the night before, so it tends to go late. And they had their phone out and were talking, and they had not turned Siri on. It was an iPhone. They had not turned Siri on, but Siri has a way of turning itself on. Anyway, so they're in the middle of describing something I'd said the night before, and just out of the blue, the Siri app interrupts and says out loud, excuse me, I didn't get that. Could you repeat that? You should have seen their face. It was pretty interesting. So I showed them how to turn Siri off. But again, you know, I believe it could turn on at any moment. Anyway, I wanted to just mention, because I've discussed this several times with people in the last 2 weeks, there's a difference between telling the truth and actionable intelligence. What a lot of people need, because they're so pressed for time and they're, you know, they're managing all sorts of different risks, is they need actionable intelligence. So telling somebody that porn is marketed with entrainment doesn't really help them, but warning them that entrainment could be used to move them into an underage site or watch a site with an underage actress, and that could result in a control file or even an arrest and indictment. So sort of showing them how the game works in a way that they know how to protect themselves is really important. And that's the difference between telling people truth they don't want to hear and giving them actionable intelligence that they may not want to hear, but it can lower their risk, it can lower their expenses, it can improve their health, it can increase their income, or otherwise just give them energy. So please come at this in a practical way. Somebody who doesn't want to hear the truth is often open to actionable intelligence if it gives them energy. I will say, if you look at all the wackiness going on, particularly on the vaccines and other things that really dumb the human intelligence now, I'm seeing more and more indication that, you know, the establishment doesn't want local intelligence on a human being. They think with implants and AI and software, they can, you know, intelligence can all be done by remote control. There is one highly coherent development that qualifies as good news. John Bolton is no longer the U.S. National Security Advisor. Whee! Money and markets. Again, I'm talking total returns year to date as of the Thursday close. Dollar, U.S. dollar, still dangerous and dominant, now up 3.02% for the year. Given everything that's going on, that's a reasonably strong performance. The fixed income market is backed up a bunch. The TLT long treasury ETF now up 16.72%. The intermediate up 8.66%. The bond aggregate up 7.6%. And junk up 12.23%. The ECB has cut interest rates further, and that's below zero. So we now have the deposit rate down to -0.5% from -0.4%. The ECB had said they weren't going to do, you know, the equivalent of quantitative easing. And now, 9 months later, they're announcing a whole new stimulus package. So they're going to be buying debt from November 1st at a pace of 20 billion euros. That's equivalent of about 32 billion a month for as long as it's necessary. So, you know, this is unbelievable. So we have sovereign governments issuing bonds at a negative interest rate, and the ECB committed to buying them. The Fed meets next week, and Powell, Chairman Powell, is expected to drop the Fed funds rate anywhere from 25 to 50 basis points. He's got more to go if he wants to catch up with the ECB. Bloomberg had a headline that is really worth sort of looking at, and that is, let me just read it. A once unthinkable collapse in global bond yields is forcing pension funds to buy bonds that offer negative returns, putting the financial security of future retirees in jeopardy. These kind of rates are not just a problem for pension funds. They're a problem for all savers, but that includes insurance companies. So you want to make sure, as this continues, that you understand the status of your pension fund and the insurance companies you depend on, and sort of be prepared for the ramifications. Everybody's circumstance is very unique, but you definitely want to talk to the financial people in your life about what this means. Speaking of junk bonds, Ford was downgraded. Ford Motor Company, that's $84 billion of what was once, you know, the equivalent of AAA or close to it, going down to junk. That's a very painful signal to the bond market, but credit problems have just begun, in my opinion. Equities, the S&P up 21.6%, with bonds backing off. They're now outperforming treasuries once again. Home builders having a great year, up 35%. The European ETF up 14%, VGK up 14.52%, Germany up 11%. Developed markets minus North America up 14%, Chinese large caps up 7.2%, small caps up 9.41%, emerging markets up 8.34%, commodities still almost flat at 2.31%, clear sign of global slowdown. Gold up 16.55%, silver rocking up 16.53%, and oil up 25.26%. So let's look at the big stories in the financial markets and geopolitics. The Brexit box. We've gone from the Brexit blues to the Brexit box. Boris Johnson is really in a box. He is now facing legislation that's received royal assent that requires that he seek an extension from the EU of the October 31 hard date. At the same time, he can't go back on his promise during his last election. as Conservative Party leader. So he can't go back on his promise. It would tear the Conservative Party apart. He tried to get an early election. He got turned down in that attempt. And so he potentially has a number of creative ways to take a hard Brexit. The question is, will he? The paper he was using to circulate or to plan the hard Brexit is now circulating. And, you know, it would hardly be considered a marketing document for a hard Brexit. So it's going to be very interesting to see over the next month, month and a half, how Boris works his way out of the box. Dr. Farrell did a very interesting News and Views from the Nefarium video. You can find it on his website on something called the Pan-European Military. There have been leaks and rumors and claims that the British are in fact merging their military into a European military that would be under the command of Brussels, which is hard to believe that the Brits would take their nuclear arsenal and turn it over to the control of Brussels. But it's been sort of claimed and floating around for a while, and I've never known what the facts were enough to argue for or against it. We have in the House of Lords, the Lord Blackheath has come out and said, if you don't do a hard Brexit, if you stay in the European Union, the U.S. military will be turned over to command control by Brussels. Now, the question is this for real or is this disinformation? My vote is there's a very high chance it's disinformation. But the interesting thing about this kind of disinformation is if England does stay in the EU, ultimately that is exactly what's going to happen. It may take 10 or 20 years, but it's almost as though the intelligence agencies have decided to create a simple version of the long-term truth to just sort of underscore the importance of sovereignty, you know, maintaining sovereignty versus giving up sovereignty. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's a disinformation with the gist of it actually quite true. Anyway, but I put links to Dr. Farrell's presentation and Lord Blackheath's presentation there as well. As I mentioned earlier, Macron astonished with a new speech. We have, last week I described Mark Carney as the governor of the Bank of England declaring the U.S. reserve currency days are numbered. Now we have Macron basically declaring the end of Western hegemony over the world. So let me read to you from a translation that Saker did. Saker, again, does a marvelous job of making these things accessible. The international order, this is Macron's speech, the international order is being shaken in an unprecedented manner, above all with, if I may say so, by the great upheaval that is undoubtedly taking place for the first time in our history in almost every field and with a profoundly historic magnitude. The first thing we observe is a major transformation, geopolitical and strategic recomposition. We are undoubtedly experiencing the end of Western hegemony over the world. We are accustomed to an international order which, since the 18th century, rested on a Western hegemony, mostly French in the 18th century by the inspiration of the Enlightenment, then mostly British in the 19th century thanks to the Industrial Revolution, and finally mostly American in the 20th century thanks to the two great conflicts and the economic and political domination of this power. Things change, and they are now deeply shaken by the mistakes of Westerners in certain crises. Let me say that again. By the mistakes of Westerners in certain crises, by the choices that have been made by Americans for several years, which did not start with this administration, but which lead to revisiting certain implications and conflicts in the Middle East and elsewhere, and to rethinking a deep diplomatic and military strategy, and sometimes elements of solidarity that we thought were intangible for eternity, even if we had constituted together in geopolitical moments that have changed. And then there is the emergence of new powers whose impact we have probably underestimated for a long time. China's at the forefront, but also the Russian strategy, which has, it must be said, been pursued more successfully in recent years. I will come back to that. India, that is emerging these new economies that are also becoming powers, not only economic but political, and that think themselves, as some have written, as real civilizational states which now come not only to shake up our international order, but who also come to weigh in on the economic order and to rethink the political order and the political imagination that goes with it, with such dynamism and much more inspiration than we have. So let me say that again. With much dynamism and much more inspiration than we have. Look at India, Russia, and China. They have a much stronger political inspiration than Europeans today. They think about our planet with a true logic, a true philosophy, and imagination that we've lost a little bit. So if you look at what Carney said, and now you look at what Macron's saying, and you realize that they're on a similar, their leash goes to similar, if not the same place. It's quite interesting. There was one comment this week on Carney's speech saying that he was basically not really giving a serious speech for the global order. He was just pitching for a high-paid job at one of the crypto firms now that he's leaving the Bank of England. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's even worse. Because for the governor of the Bank of England to use the world stage to pitch for high-paying jobs in cryptocurrency underscores that Macron is right about the failure of leadership. Now, speaking of the Western leaders who blew their unipolar opportunity, yesterday was the 18th anniversary of 9/11. We took that occasion to post a new interview called Truth-Telling 9/11. It was one I recorded with Thomas Meyer and Dr. Niels Harrit, the Danish scientist and professor, retired professor at the University of Copenhagen, who exploded to global consciousness, as he would say, as a result of his work on the what caused the buildings to come down. It's a great interview because it goes into how the U.S. got NATO on board, but it also goes into Dr. Harrit's journey as someone who watched the films of Building 7 fall and realized, you know, the official story is not true. First of all, two airplanes can't cause two buildings to come down. It's just structurally impossible. But they certainly can't cause a third building that no plane ever hit to come down. So there are many, many aspects, but it's exceptionally important, I believe, as a political matter, that we get to the point where we have a very high percentage of people in this country who understand that the official story of 9/11 can't possibly be true. And oddly enough, if you look at who's helping us get there, you know, who would have thought it's Jeffrey Epstein? Jeffrey Epstein's alleged suicide and the rejection of the population to the to the crazy, wacky conspiracy theory that he committed suicide may help us get to 80% knowing that the official story of 9/11 is just a bunch of bunk. We have serious potential genocide going on in India. I've mentioned it before with Modi and the sort of Hindu nationalist groups targeting the Muslims in Kashmir and the others on the eastern side of the country close to Bangladesh. It's almost like he's targeting and making stateless 11 million people and trying to push them out into the two Muslim countries to the right and the left. There's a retired J.P. Morgan Chase banker who's become an Indian MP who, on her maiden speech, gave a rip-roaring speech about the seven signs of fascism. And it's pretty wonderful. Anyway, we posted several versions. You can find it under Geopolitics. We're watching all across the world, and particularly on the Silk Road, a push by Israel to run everybody's IT systems through Israel, including all of the United States. If you haven't watched Zero Days, the documentary about the Stuxnet, you can see the problem with Israel's unbelievably aggressive insertion of Israeli cybersecurity and Israeli IT into everybody and everything. It's like Israel's trying to backdoor the whole planet. The U.S. is now pressuring Israel to cut investments on Belt and Road. And I will tell you from watching sort of how things are flowing out on the black budget, it looks to me like FASB 56 is giving the old WASPs the opportunity to cut their longstanding partnership with the organized crime faction associated with Israel. If you go back and listen to my interview with Dave Martin on the Forrestal assassination I get into the beginning of that relationship because I think it was very much part and parcel of getting the 47 and 49 acts done. Speaking of which, AT&T is in play. Who would have thought AT&T, from what I know, is the sort of lead provider of compromised telecommunications to the NSA. Paul Singer of Elliott Management, another big Israel supporter, has picked up $3 billion of stock and is pressing management. You wonder what the real press backdoor. Trump tweeted out, this is from CNBC, about this new stake. He tweeted out, "Great news that an activist investor is now involved with AT&T as the owner of a very low-rating CNN. Perhaps they will now put a stop to all the fake news emanating from its non-credible anchors," Trump wrote. Remember, AT&T got CNN when they picked up Time Warner. So Trump continues in his tweet, "Also, I hear that because of its bad ratings, it's losing a fortune. But most importantly, CNN is bad for the USA." The WeWork IPO is stalled. It's being pulled back, and they're making governance changes and trying to address some of the investors' concerns. But it's a good sign. It's as though investors are starting to say and look at all these different IT or sort of tech unicorns and say, you know, we need to see a fundamental business that can cash flow and make money. We're also seeing, again, more problems with cybersecurity. If you want to protect yourself and your enterprises from ransomware, ransomware is a Microsoft problem. So get rid of, you know, get all that Microsoft off your computer. I keep bringing up LibreOffice. There's plenty of good open source software that protects you from these problems. New article we just posted on the blog tonight, the Oklahoma State Pension Fund lost $4.2 million to cybersecurity problems. They expect to get it back, but I just think these things are going to continue to accelerate. So you want to make sure you do everything you can to protect yourself. The secrecy competition is on. A new article this week, Germany is considering a shadow budget to circumvent national debt rules. It's almost like everybody's now got to keep up with FASB 56. I must say, whether it's Epstein or the Clinton Foundation or what the Germans are up to, every time I turn around, I think the reverberation from the creation of FASB 56 is having major economic and political impacts globally. So if you haven't read The Real Game of Missing Money, I strongly recommend you get it and you read the introductions and the summary parts and then skim the rest if you don't want to go to it in detail. But this is really, really, really big. Our hero this week is Pamela Anderson, who is a celebrity who started off with arguably the most successful career coming out of Playboy magazine and being a Playboy bunny. She is doing a remarkably good job of defending Julian Assange, and what she's doing is very difficult and courageous to do. She's handled herself from everything I can see very, very effectively, and I think it's very important that someone does, in fact, what she's doing. She was just on The View, which is a daytime talk show with Whoopi Goldberg and a variety of other sort of women. It's very much targeted at women. And she did a very impressive job of arguing for Assange and sort of handling some really nasty treatment, particularly from Meghan McCain, Senator McCain's daughter. I mean, it was really the human versus the inhuman. It was quite remarkable to see. When I announced she was going to be the hero, somebody posted a comment or pointed out something she does that I would probably disagree with. Here's the thing. Brave people don't always agree, but everything I've seen of Anderson in this situation tells me, you know, I'm watching somebody who's acting with extraordinary integrity and being very effective at it and doing something that is very potentially dangerous for a celebrity of her sort of presence and market share. And, you know, this woman is risking her life, and it's very, very courageous what she's doing. She's doing it remarkably effective. It was frightening to see Whoopi Goldberg arguing on behalf of the DNC and privacy for the DNC. saying that Assange publishing the proof that the DNC sabotaged Sanders' campaign was somehow wrong. And you think, whoopee, what in the world happened to you? You used to stand for open minds and free speech. But, you know, it's we're in this environment where everything goes, at least Whoopi and the other ones were civil. Meghan McCain was, you know, you almost wondered if she was human or not. Our interview this week is a really very useful conversation with Dr. Mark Skidmore as he's gone through the process of learning about the missing money, surveying the missing money, trying to communicate about the missing money. He's done a lot of thinking about how reality works versus official reality and came up with a very great PowerPoint presentation that is very useful as you listen to this interview. And he talks about reality, official reality, nonsense versus my understanding. So he kind of takes four shaded areas and compares them and talks about the journey of learning more and more about reality and how you handle the the divorce between reality and official reality and how you really avoid getting into nonsense. It's a little bit like the conversation we had with John Rappaport several years ago on communication with people who are stuck in the official reality. And so that was our blast from the past this week. One of the things I find myself saying to a fair amount of people, there's several themes in my conversations that come up because this issue of, you know, reality versus official reality is plaguing everyone I know. This is something that every one of us is grappling with in our lives. One of the things I've said is it's extremely important if you're going to build a career or a business that you do it in reality. Now, many people want to stay in official reality, but there's plenty, you know, there's plenty going on in the world which the reality circle intersects with the official reality. So people in the official reality need road and bridges, just like people in reality need road and bridges. So these two intersect, and you absolutely, what you don't want to do is build skills in something that is outside reality. And so as soon as the Mr. Global decides to pivot and change, you know, if you're building a career or a business in something that's not grounded in reality, you can just have the rug pulled out from under you. So I sometimes refer to it as life in the intersection. So for heaven's sakes, you know, build in reality. And if you want to stay in official reality, no problem. Simply find something within the intersection and something likely to stay in the intersection for a long, long time. So that whatever you're doing, you're grounded in reality and you're building skills and you're building a business in reality. So it's the difference between carbon credits, trading carbon credits, and teaching or practicing material sciences. So stay within that intersection. Don't find yourself off in official reality with no reality to ground you. The second thing I keep talking about, I just mentioned during the theme, and that is actionable intelligence. There's a difference between the truth and actionable intelligence. Truth is something that you can't necessarily apply right now. Actionable intelligence is something that's practical that you can apply. And it's very important you sequence your effort to educate other people to those things that will give them energy. You want to give them actionable intelligence. What I'm running into is a lot of people who, for reasons of social proprieties, or they want to, you know, they want their kids and loved ones to like them. We're not protecting our children and loved ones from the surveillance capital, the entrainment and mind control. People need to understand that this stuff exists. And so I just think it's exceptionally important that we take responsibility to provide the covering to the people we love and helping them understand that this stuff can really put them at risk financially, legally. You know, I go back to the control file example. So if you're going to focus effort on getting people educated, focus effort on getting them actionable intelligence about how to protect themselves from the invisible systems that are really manipulating them and draining their pocketbook. In Let's Go to the Movies, I wanted to review American Factory, which is a new documentary about a Chinese company that purchased a shuttered General Motors plant in Dayton, Ohio, that's making windows and glass materials for the American car companies. It's a very important documentary, and huge compliments to the Chinese company owner who gave his permission and allowed this movie to be made. You watch the young Chinese workers brought from China to help start the plant, dealing with much older American workers. You see the different ways they go about trying to be productive and the different challenges of trying to achieve productivity together. It's very interesting, and it talks about many of the different problems. It's kind of shocking. The plant gets up and running. The Chinese make the incredible investment. Then the workers start to talk about unionizing when, in fact, the plant is losing $40 million. You know, if the plant's losing $40 million, that's the time everybody has to pull together and say, we have to make sure this plant is profitable. What do we do? And instead, you have a lot of the older American workers running off and saying, well, let's unionize. And, you know, the culture clashes are bad. The Chinese, partly because of age, but partly because of attitude, are more productive than the Americans. But what you see is automation is quickly becoming more productive than all the humans. So the movie ends with an ominous allusion to automation is coming. But you definitely see what happens to people whose learning speeds have not kept up with the way the world is going. It's hard for me to watch a movie like this because in the early 90s, I was trying to get the country to do the things it would need to help the American workforce basically jump the curve on globalization. And they did the opposite. They dumbed down, they fed them GMO food and flu shots and all sorts of other things and created a workforce that was so out of touch and behind the curve that you get the result that you get when you watch this movie. So in one sense, it's heartbreaking. It's a little bit irritating. It was financed by the Obamas, who are enjoying their $60 million kickback on giving away the 24 to 29 trillion and, you know, a portion of the 21 trillion that is causing the enormous pain to this workforce. And so it's almost like the murderer, you know, making a documentary of the funeral of their victims. Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. I would second event Montreal. And if you need another organizer, I would be happy to help however I could. I would love to come back up to Montreal and Quebec City. Then a long question about Nicholas Rockefeller, who Aaron Rousseau discussed on that video where he talks about the plans to chip the population. And in fact, I talked with James before he got all this information, so when he was doing his due diligence. So yes, I'm very aware of it. And you ask, given how distant Nicholas was from the Rockefeller family, how much does Nicholas Rockefeller actually know about the activity central to the Rockefeller family? Any feedback? I've always assumed that his connection was distant. But in this case, I think Rousseau's story and the intel is highly reliable. The technology has advanced from what Rockefeller and Rousseau's understanding was then. And so it's a little technologically old. But the idea of Neuralink with AI replacing, you know, most of local intelligence and all sorts of efforts between education, vaccines, food, and, you know, ideas like Neuralink, I find it a very useful, very credible clip. The other thing is Aaron Rousseau is someone I had great respect for and great confidence in. And I think he, for many different reasons, if you listen to that story, I think it was a very important and representative conversation. So I'm not worried about the distance of Nicholas from the Rockefellers. I think he nailed exactly where the Rockefellers wanted to go. And again, remember, I've had dealings with the Rockefellers, and I'll just say that that whole group, in my experience, are slavers. And I don't say that lightly. Hi, Catherine. I hope you're well. It is an honor to finally speak to you. First of all, thank you for all you do to help spread the truth of our world to everyday people. You've helped me see the world for what it is truly, although the journey is never over, and I will always be grateful for that. As to my question, I'm 29 years old, and until a few months ago, I worked as a business manager for JP Morgan. I worked in banking for approximately 5 to 6 years and just finished graduate school MBA this past April. At some point, I realized an epiphany is probably more accurate. I could not continue working in a role I did not particularly enjoy for the next 30 years. I decided to leave Morgan without knowing what I would be doing next. Normally, such a decision would have seemed irrational, drastic, but for the first time in my life, I felt I was making the right decision in this arena of my life. Originally, after high school, I wanted to pursue a career in intelligence, CIA or FBI, but my parents talked me into pursuing a more practical career path, finance. Just FYI, a lot of people I know in Wall Street would go into intelligence first and then go into finance. It's a very good background for finance. I would like to go back and try to pursue a career in intelligence, and I'm trying to decide the best route for getting the best experience for a long-term career. Would you recommend going into one of the military branches in order to gain experience as an intelligence officer and then subsequently transition into the private sector? I know your experiences with the intelligence agencies has not been exactly friendly, helpful to say the least, but I'm hard-pressed to find different avenues of gaining relevant experience before I'm able to leverage it into a role in the private sector. Is this approach wrong altogether? I would say the intelligence services are probably the best ways to get the training you want on how the real world really works. In my opinion, you're much likely to get better training at the Office of Naval Intelligence or the Defense Intelligence Agency. So that's military intelligence. I think you probably have a better chance of better training there than at the CIA or NSA. Again, there are 17 domestic intelligence agencies. Actually, you know, Treasury has covert operations. That would be very interesting given your finance background. And so you continue. You recently mentioned that people should try to gain employment in the real economy reality versus the fake economy reality. So any advice on how to best accomplish this, given my career preferences, would be greatly appreciated. Thank you again. I don't know the best way to get recruited into military intelligence. I would talk to a Navy recruiter if you or your family have any connections with retired high-level officers. I would talk with them. I know the CIA, traditionally, you've been able to get recruited in directly. I just don't know about the NSA. If I were you, I would focus not on getting a job. I would focus on getting really serious training. So I would go to the people who'd give you the best training. And the best training is not only the best training program, but they keep circulating you around and you get lots of varied assignments and experience. So breadth is what you want. If there was anybody outside of the military that I would want to talk to, and I can't introduce you because I don't know him, I'm one of his subscribers, it's Mark Devine of Unbeatable Mind. He was, his parents had a company in upstate New York, and so when he graduated, they persuaded him to become a CPA, and he hated it. So he went back and became a Navy SEAL, graduated first in his Navy SEAL class, which is unbelievably impressive. Had a very successful career as a SEAL and then started Unbeatable Mind. So if I were you, I would sign up for Unbeatable Mind, read his book, and see if you can't get access to his advice on where you could get the best training. And again, that's what I would focus on. Where can you get the best training? Now, a good, deep military intelligence experience, as long as you don't get yourself stuck in a rabbit hole, is it's great experience for many, many different fields in the private sector, whether finance or operations on the asset side of the balance sheet. So you can convert success in an intelligence career into many, many great jobs in the private sector. Private entities, enterprises have to manage risk, and you can't manage risk unless you have a clear picture of how the world really works. And that's part of what intelligence agencies do, look calmly and clearly at the real world and the real allocation of resources. You know, the question is, how many security levels will you have access to? How long do you stay to have to get them? But the transition to the private sector should be relatively easy if you've had a successful career in military intelligence. Hi, Catherine. I'm wondering if the crimes of the Clinton Foundation will find cover in FASB 56. Yes, very likely. You continue. Seems like the perfect checkmate. If the Clinton Foundation was laundering money worldwide for Mr. Global, unraveling it would be too financially and politically painful. Seems like a plausible way out for those who want to see those grifters pay for their misdeeds. The Clintons did their job. Mr. Global got the money. Why rock the boat? So if you need scapegoats, there are better candidates that are less expensive to scapegoat than the Clintons. It's going to be easy to see if they come up with any kind of scapegoats of any importance. Anyway, remember, everyone who now has or controls any of that money has a vested interest in not rocking the boat because they want to keep that money. Anyway, so I've never thought there was a good chance we'd see the Clintons prosecuted, but I don't see any sign. With FASB 56, you don't need them anymore, so you let them quietly go off to the sunset talking about how much they care about women's rights. New question, which securities trading platforms do you recommend, and are there any that you recommend avoiding? I don't recommend any of them just because I'm not current. I haven't done a recent due diligence. And on the Solari report, I try and avoid investment advice or anything that might look like it. I or former clients have used Fidelity, Schwab, E-Trade, and Ameritrade at various times. Interactive was one I started to do diligence a few years ago because from everything I could tell, it had a lot more global reach. And if you look at where I think a lot of the opportunities are, I think you know, the more you can have global reach, the better. I do believe in a pinch that Fidelity will have the most support from the top of the financial system to be protected in a, you know, a bailout kind of situation. Anyway, so I would say that Fidelity has the best capacity to make it through difficult times. And in my experience, they also have the best branch office manners. You know, they're not anywhere near as invasive as some of the others. But anyway, so I'd say Fidelity has the most endurance in bad times, and Interactive has the most global reach, if my old due diligence holds true still. I think that the custodial risks in securities across the board are very significant, but it's ubiquitous, so I can't say that one is much worse than the other. All securities have the big problems in the security system. Anyway, so those are some thoughts for what it's worth. Hi, Catherine. I meant to send this for a while with a couple of things in my question below. A few Solari reports you mentioned not having archived the link for the fire at the Fed in October 2017. Below is a link that includes a Twitter video of fire coming out of the chimney. So that's very useful. Thanks. I recently heard the CEO of the Philly Zoo speak at a Rotary event. I was interested in his background as a banker and numbers guy, and his proposal for the zoo's relationship with its neighbors in Mantua and Strawberry Mansion in West Philly, where there are a lot of vacant row houses. His plan to put people into business growing hydroponic food for the animals inside the vacant buildings. That's a great idea. He specifically said that equity is the only way out of poverty and that just giving the people a job isn't enough. I agree totally. It has to be a two-way street. He wants them to run their own business after the zoo shows them how to do it. If he succeeds, maybe he would be a future hero of the week. Actually, if he tries, he's a future hero. But it's very important to set those things up so you give 20 people a go and you only expect two to really make it on an enduring basis. So I hope they set it up with a sort of standard venture model. So I thought it was a perfect example of what you refer to as place-based equity. It sounds very good. I'll check it out. The next one is, my question is with regard to the last podcast with Carolyn Betts, that's Deep State 5. I really appreciate all the info that you shared as it's eye-opening to someone who has never been confronted with this kind of thing. The one question that I kept wanting to ask was who is the whistleblower served as the basis of the Keytam suit? I believe you said that the HUD IG said that they had documents from floor to ceiling from this guy, et cetera, et cetera. The Keytam whistleblower was a HUD contractor named John Irvin. The reason I didn't talk about him is I basically consider him irrelevant. You know, I have a theory as to who designed and wrote up the construct of the two, both the QTAM and the lawsuit filed not under seal. I don't think he created or invented any of it. I think he's just the stooge who worked hard and was well paid to sort of implement somebody else's scheme, is what I believe. And so I think he was unimportant. There are a lot of people who ran around and said he was an evil genius, because that's what you do when you're trying to protect the real perpetrators. Anyway, so I always thought of him as a low-level stringer who couldn't have gotten to first base without help from the HUD IG, the Department of Justice, Judge Stanley Spork, and, you know, who kept a QTAM that had no evidence of wrongdoing under seal for like 5 years. Cuomo, who kept slipping him money with contracts and settlements that he didn't have to make. So, you know, Cuomo was clearly slipping the guy millions of dollars of taxpayer money for, you know, for no good reason other than to keep things like this going. And I think the CIA and DOJ were both in there. So when I would do depositions, when they were all there, you know, the DOJ and Irvin guys, you would have thought they were having sex together. They were so close. And we used to have his bio and a video about him up on the litigation section of the website at DylanReedandCo.com. It disappeared several times in hacking. Various times I found it and put it back up. And we just haven't been able to find it in the last go around. I'm sure it's someplace. Anyway, but you wonder if they wanted to make sure the weak link was not exposed when they did that. But now that I think about it, now that I'm familiar with Neuralink, I almost wonder if they weren't prototyping that way back when. Anyway, so, you know, I didn't talk to him because I just don't think he's that relevant. You know, when somebody wants something like this done, they get, I can't tell you how many stringers they have hanging around. It's frightening. Anyway, you continue. I look forward to attending the Malvern event again in December. All the best. See you there. Okay. Catherine, I've been a subscriber of the Salary Report for many years and appreciate your efforts in helping me attempt to better understand the current state of the world. As I'm sure you will agree, we live in interesting times. I've had some long-term concerns that have come to light in light of your commentary and was wondering if you're still offering consulting services as you have in the past. If so, please feel free to reach out to me and perhaps we have a conversation sometimes in the future. I still do consultations, but only on Solari. I don't do consultations on Solari Investment Advisory Services. So I can do a consultation as long as it does not include advice regarding securities. So I can talk about real estate, I can talk about the world, I can talk about precious metals, I can talk about your business, but I can't talk about securities or make recommendations as to security investments. So if you're interested, contact office@solari.com if you want to talk to my assistant and learn more. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, a great in-depth conversation, A Hero's Journey with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda Moulton Howe, I think, invented many terms. One was breakaway civilization, but one was high strangeness. Linda is the most credentialed, accomplished investigative reporter in the United States regarding many of the most important phenomena hidden behind FASB 56 and 70 years of phenomenally expensive secrecy. You know, if there's anybody who's pierced the veil of expensive secrecy, it's Linda Moulton Howe. It's incredible what she's accomplished. And it's a real privilege. I wanted to talk with her primarily about where did you get the courage and the fortitude to do what you've done. It's quite remarkable. But if anybody is not guilty of a material omission on this planet, it's Linda Moulton Howe. Anyway, so great conversation with her. Then September 26th, we're back with a wellness series. I would have normally waited, but I think this information is so important that I wanted to get it in your hands quickly. How to Grow Healthy Adults with Dr. Michelle Perro, a wonderful interview with an outstanding doctor who knows a great deal about protecting children from what's happening in the world. Then on October 3rd, we launch into News Trends and Stories, Part 1 and Part 2, on October 10th with Dr. Joseph Farrell. We have so much to talk about. I can't wait. I'll be driving over to see Joseph in a little bit more than a week, so I'll be back on the road to get that interview. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then we will dive into the equity overview and then future science series with Ulrich Groniger, back with more science on DNA, and then coming up while I'm in Paris to see the Da Vinci with Robert Duper and Nina Hein, Leonardo da Vinci and the Power of Our Imagination with John Rappaport. Yes, John Rappaport is back. I'm excited about that. So we have a great lineup. Until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.